Chad Nick, Real DX at Health Innovation Media with Dr. Nick at the Connected Health Summit in San Diego. It's beautiful outside. We're inside. How are you doing, Nick?
Well, I wish I was outside because you're right. It is beautiful outside.
Tell me, what are some of the exciting things that you've seen today from some of the earlier panelists? You did a great talk, but what's percolating up today to the top that's got your attention?
Well, I think just the fact that this is happening, the fact that we're talking about mHealth, it's such a central tenet to everything that we're doing in healthcare, is exciting to me. I came to this conference last year, and it was well attended. It's even better attended this year. That means that we've got more attention, more focus on this. And from a healthcare standpoint, that's the fundamental component of a solution. We have to engage with our patients where they are. They're mobile, they want to use this technology, and this is part of the solutions that are going to help them get better, stay out of hospital, and deliver high quality care when they need it, not all of the time, not forcing them into a hospital.
That's awesome. I ran into you a few months ago in the spring at HIMSS, and it seems like, you know, there was some momentum picking up. You and I have been to several conferences since then, and to me, it seems like the shift is happening. We're starting to get some speed. What do you feel?
Well, first of all, I'd like to tell you that my pink socks have been on ever since. So, I need a new pair. You should get me a new pair.
I can hook you up on that.
You're right. HIMSS was exciting. I think, you know, there was a lot of resistance to Chicago as a location. But despite that, we saw an amazing number of people come. We saw just huge interest in this platform solution that's delivering real value to patients. And ultimately, we're not focused on the technology. We're focused on the patients. And whilst all of this stuff is good, it's how it supports the patient in being a better, healthier human being, helping us live our lives in high quality version in the fun part of the chart from my presentation.
Right. I love the slide that you had. It was like, you know, the most important part of wellness is staying healthy, and then at the end you die. You know, so it's a very, you know, the drop off is very quick, and that, I think that is an awesome goal for all of us in the connected health space.
Yeah, so the chart, I've used it in a number of instances. It always gets a chuckle, you know. It's sort of putting things in a two-dimensional chart of life, and you know, you hope that you're going to be well, and then just die, and it's going to be a quick activity. Although maybe that's not everybody's desire, but the important thing of that is that what happens for most people is that they tend to descend into this pre-illness phase, and that's for the most part being ignored or not well addressed by the healthcare systems. They tend to focus on the illness part when we drop into this point where we need hospital care, we need physicians, we need all of these clinicians delivering better services. And what we really need to do from a financial standpoint, but just from a quality of life, is keep people in that top area of wellness. And if they descend into pre-illness, identify it. We do that with wearables and all this data that we're capturing and collecting. And then give them information and give them tools to say, this is what you need to do. This is how you can correct it. Because ultimately, everybody is saying, I want to be well. It's not as if we all say, I want to be unwell. I'm going to, you know, descend. Not at all. They just need help and support. And I think mobile health and digital health tools, and particularly the wearables, that are going to give us all this data that allow us to make better decisions and start to provide real value to people, keep them out of hospitals, and then free up the hospital resources for when we really need that care and have them optimized to deliver it and get us back to wellness.
Awesome. And what's your view on EHRs and the patient portal? I mean, Drew Schiller from Validic, you know, cited 1.2% of people in any given month actually interact with their EMR. I mean, and he said that's pathetic, and I agree. I mean, it's just a shockingly low number. I mean, portals, the HR, is that a thing of the past? Are we moving into the, I hear Bill Bunting from EMC often say we're moving into the post EHR era. What do you think?
Well, so recently there was a post from one of the journals that asked that question, how do we get people more engaged on the portal? And I think it's about providing utility. Why do I go to the portal? Just to look at information? What's it doing for me? And by the way, as I think Mark Scrimshaw highlighted, you know, we're suffering from portalitis. I think he called it 27 different portals. I don't want to go to 27. So, you know, I would compare it to the financial era where we have multiple banks and different cards and checking system that was all disconnected. And when we moved to this unified banking system, I could take my card, I could go anywhere in the US, and now I can go anywhere in the world. Plug in my card, my PIN number works, money comes out, and it comes out in the right currency. And from a technology standpoint, Quicken said, well, you don't have to go to your banking website, and you don't have to go to your credit card website. We're going to aggregate all that information. Well, we go to Quicken all the time. And it's got everything that's useful and allows me to pay my bills. So it's utility from these portals. I don't think that they're gone. I think the EHR remains a relevant data source, but it's presenting that information in a useful way that says, you need to come here. If my results were there and I could action it, and maybe I could communicate with my physician. Oh, and by the way, he needs to be paid for that. That's a useful tool. I don't need to go into the office and have this dialogue with him. Maybe I do. Maybe emails me back and says, well, you need to come and see me. This is something we need to talk about. Equally, you could say, everything's good. Carry on. Make the portals useful. People will go to them.
Right. That's a very good point. And another thing that was well received by the audience, well, everything's well received that you say when you talk. So, but one of the things that got a really, you know, a big push in the Twittersphere activity after you mentioned it in your talk was, you were discussing reimbursement issues and specifically around telehealth and telemedicine. And one of the comments you made was that the need for this to be asynchronous, you know, that it's convenient and user-friendly, kind of like email, right? And so tell me more about what you see for the future of asynchronous and reimbursement, you know, parity laws for reimbursement. Tell me what you think.
So I always come at this, my glass is full. It's not half full, half empty. It's full. It's half full of water, or whiskey in my case, and half full of air. That's full to me. And it's the same with mHealth. It's the same with telehealth and the reimbursement models. And whilst it's imperfect, we've seen the government move towards it. We're moving to a better model. They're starting to pay for it. It's imperfect because, as you rightly say, it doesn't include the ability to change the time or time shift that interaction. So the best analogy I have for that is email. Imagine if every time somebody emailed you, you had to respond. Well, of course you're not going to. And it's the same with medicine. I don't necessarily need to interact with my doctor. I just want to know he's going to interact and have some response time. So it needs to be within, you know, some defined limit so that I know I'm going to get an answer and I'm going to be comfortable with it. But outside of that, it doesn't need to be real time. There are some times when it does, and that's okay. And that's missing in the provisions, except for Alaska and Honolulu, where they've allowed for it. But I think that's going to change. You know, every journey begins with a small step. And, you know, this is a pretty reasonable step. And I think there's a clear pathway being set out by the government, the insurers, who are all saying, yeah, this makes sense. It's going to save money. It's going to deliver better care. Oh, and by the way, the patients are going to love it. What's not to like?
I saw somebody posted something in the Twitter feed the other day that was right on. It said, you know, if I feel like I need to have a live session, a telemedicine with my doctor, you know, odds are I probably need to be in the emergency room at that point. Yeah.
I think, you know, for the most part, patients are intelligent. They make good decisions, not always, you know, and technology can help them in making those decisions. You know, if you need that live interaction, maybe it is an in-person. For some people, it might not be possible for these remote locations. I worked in Australia and, you know, for the longest time they had telehealth that was over the radio. They even have school over the radio. It's so remote in parts of the Northern Territories. There's nothing wrong with that if that's fulfilling a need and a purpose. And I think technology is going to improve that interaction. You know, who hasn't sat on a WebEx or a remote session and not paid attention because, you know, there's all these other distractions? But as soon as you add video into that, and now you can see the people, and by the way, they can see you, changes the level of interaction. The same with healthcare. You know, if I have a face-to-face interaction and we're looking at each other, we can engage using technology. We can start to use tools that maybe look into my ear, look at my eye, all of that. It's being so reduced in size and cost. And now we can do this remote interaction. It can be urgent, potentially, and saves you trawling in. And from a health prevention, if I've got the flu or I've got, you know, some contagious disease, or quite frankly, I'm feeling terrible, trawling into the doctor, parking up, finding parking, sitting in the waiting room. Oh, and by the way, let's infect everybody that's there. Is that the best choice? Probably not. But I could do some effective consultation. And potentially in the future, what's going to happen? The doctor's going to say, I think you ought to take the following. Let me sign up onto the Amazon drone service and I'll have it delivered from your pharmacy. I'm telling you, that's what I'd like, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And I can see that happening. It's funny, you mentioned rural as a potential use case here and a need for this. And you know, I'm like, you know, I was thinking outback, you know, rural areas. And at HIMSS, I ran into Jessica Kahn, who's the head of IT for CMS. And we were talking about, you know, initiatives they have underway in telehealth in rural areas. And I was thinking, you know, Georgia, Alabama, Montana, Wyoming, North Dakota. She's like, no. She goes, I'm talking in Manhattan. We view parts of Manhattan as a rural area. There are people that live in these buildings that don't have any connectivity. They're inside the building. They don't have cell coverage. That has to be an asynchronous play. You know, the provider, the home health, you know, the patient's family, the patient themselves, you know, they get out on the street. Now they have connectivity. That's asynchronous.
I think that's true. And the other model that you see that from is Africa, where, you know, people have phones, but they're not smartphones necessarily, but they text message. We've seen huge progress in the Saharan subcontinent, Africa, where they're doing really effective healthcare delivery with simple text messaging, simple guidance, store and forward of as, you know, minimal amount of data, because it's expensive because there's not the services, but it's radically improved the healthcare delivery. Very exciting. Sad that we have that in, you know, the United States of America. We ought to fix that too. But in the meantime, you know, deliver the care in the best possible way.
Thank you. I know you're in a rush, but I've got one more question for you. And it was also in your talk today. And it was one of the things that almost people cheered out loud. It was talking about wellness and incentives. And, you know, you had this, you know, your thought was, look, you know, get the money up front and then take it away. That's really...
It is. I mean, it's not radical to an economist. They tend to sort of talk about this incentives that we know, but it's an interesting psychological effect. If I hand you $100 and say, I want you to be healthy and define some specifics, but I give you the money up front, I want to say it's by a factor of 6 to 10 times more effective in achieving that positive outcome than saying, hey, I've got $100. If you do the following things, you can have it. Once you have the money, it's much harder to give it up. And, you know, that's part of the function that we see of the successful support groups and so forth. A little bit radical, because now, you know, potentially employers have to go back to their employees and say, hey, I'm taking this, you know. So there are some difficult ethical challenges. But ultimately, if, you know, I think if you do good, if your intentions are good, I think you can find a pathway that's effective and, you know, everybody can be comfortable with.
Awesome. Dr. Nick, thank you so much. Always good to see you.
Always a pleasure.